Our gospel lesson this morning comes from Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. Now, I must say that the title of this sermon came whenever I was first, going through the process of deciding what to preach. I kind of do that a few weeks ahead of time, and I read this, and the last thing Jesus says in this passage is, shh, don't tell anyone what you've learned here today. And I thought, don't tell anyone. Now that is the Presbyterian evangelism code right there. Don't tell anyone. And there's this great profound statement, and then that's what we're left with. But the good news is that Jesus changes his tone later, and he does leave us at the very last bit of the Gospel of Matthew, and he says, go, tell everyone. So it's all about the timing, and it's all about the circumstances. But this passage is actually, historically speaking, probably one of the most politically charged passages that we have ever declared so in our history. It is the passage where Peter makes a great declaration, and Jesus says, upon this I will build my church. And so we have literally shed blood and fought wars and formed governments and taken down governments over this passage of scripture. Christians have done this to one another. And it's so strange because it's such a beautiful declaration of faith, and we, in our sinfulness and our humanity, turned it into something just so devastating. But thankfully, we have come to peace over that. But as we read this, imagine the power that this passage has had in our lives over time. Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, and others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. He said to them, but who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon of Jonah, son of Jonah. For flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he sternly ordered the disciples, do not tell anyone that he was the Messiah. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I don't want any of you to take this the wrong way, but when I ask this question, but who do you think you are? Now, if I ask that in that tone of voice, you're automatically going to get defensive, and I don't mean for you to. If I ask you, who do you think you are? There's no easy way to ask that question, is it? Because it's just so loaded. We get to feel, well, what do you mean? Who do you think I am? Who do you think you are? But that's identity is at the center of this passage today. And identity really is at the center of who we are in our Christian faith at this time in church history. And so one of my favorite television programs is actually called Who Do You Think You Are? And it's on PBS, and it's where each week they feature three different people who are in the public eye. They may be actors and actresses or writers, political figures, people that, are famous in some way. And what they do is they tell some of their family stories, and then as part of the show, they go through and do a full genealogical background on these folks. So generally speaking, there may be one side of the family tree that someone knows a great deal about, but then on the other side of the family tree, they may be a little thin on their knowledge. And so they'll go through and trace this big family tree, and there's a big reveal at the end where they roll out the family trees, and some people can only be traced back a little ways, and others, to Charlemagne or whatever. And so, but there's always some big reveal, like you, did you know that you were related to some king or queen, or, you know, or I hate to tell you this, but your great, great, great grandparents were brothers and sisters. You know, that's one of those, it's like, there's no fork in the family tree. We don't know what to do. So, but there's always, and it fills in this story. And it's amazing, especially when people are totally unaware of their history and who they are past maybe their grandparents, that it really is emotional for them as they come to understand who they are. And it grounds them in a way that is amazing, because they realize, like, they maybe they're a teacher or an actor or into education or something like that, and they realize, well, for generation after generation after generation, you know, there have been teachers, or there have been actors, or they have been poets, or there have been writers. You know, it's amazing, and they get overwhelmed with finding out who they are. And it's that grounding and that understanding where they can feel a little bit more complete in their lives and understand that life was going on long before them and will continue long after them. Well, in this passage of scripture, Jesus is pushing his disciples to finally be able to articulate who he is. They haven't been able to do that very well up until this point. Others, like in the passage we read last week, there was a Gentile woman who was able to declare with great faith who Jesus was, and his disciples were still just not quite in the light of day at that point. But today, Simon Peter is there, and he is able finally to articulate exactly who Jesus is and who he has come to understand Jesus to be. Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the Living God. Can you imagine in those moments what it must have been like for Jesus to finally hear one of his disciples say it? And for the rest of the disciples, Peter wasn't necessarily speaking for them. Peter answered, not, "We think you are," but he declared for himself, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the Living God." That was Jesus' identity. It is his identity. And so as we break that down a little bit, we come to understand that Peter was saying, "Jesus, you are the anointed one. You're the one we've all been waiting for. You are the Savior, not only of us, but of the world. You are the one who will bring glory back to the house of David. You are the one who is the King of Kings. You are our leader, our master, the one who we will follow in life and in death. You are the Messiah." But he's not just the Messiah. He's the Son of the Living God. In those moments, Peter came to understand and stated what he understood, that Jesus was something more than just a living, breathing human being. His relationship to God was as parent and child, father and son. And God wasn't just some ordinary idol that you put on yourself. God is a living God. God is the living God. God is dynamic. God is active. God is proactive. God is the one who makes promises and covenants and keeps those promises and covenants and renews them whenever we break our promises and whenever we break those covenants. God comes back and renews them time and time and time again. God is the living God, the one who moves towards humanity to say, "I desire a relationship with you." God is a moving God that moves towards us and says, "I love you and I forgive you even before you know me and even before you've done anything that warrants forgiveness." God is the grace-giving God that says, "I will forgive the sins of the world, and I will hold you close to me. I will claim you as children of my own." God is the living God who is at work in the world, who has not withdrawn, who has not left us to our own devices, but who has said, I will be here, I will guide you, I will be as a shepherd, I will walk with you, I will hold you up, I will see you to the end. I will bring you wisdom. I will give you the gifts that you need in your spirit and soul. And when you don't have the gifts that are necessary, I'll bring you in contact with other people to live in faith community together. And together, you will affect the world as I call you to do it. This is the living God who Jesus knows as Father. This is the God whom we serve. This is the Christ whom we serve. And so when Peter makes this great proclamation, we recognize that this is the foundational moment. This is the foundational belief. This is the rock on which the church is built. Peter, the rock who is going to be the leader of the church in Jerusalem, who is going to be a leader in the new church, who is going to speak for the church in its first generation, and this rock of proclamation that says who Jesus Christ is and whom we believe him to be. This is the foundation that makes us different from any other faith in the world. Our understanding of Jesus Christ's relationship to God, and therefore our understanding of our relationship to Christ and God. This is the foundation of who we are and what we believe. Our belief that Christ is the Messiah. So this is our identity. Peter puts it out there for us. This is who we are. We are followers of this Messiah who is the Son of the living God. We are the followers. We are the disciples. We are the ones who are going to minister in his name, to be a part of whatever he creates and to do whatever he asks us to do, because we believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. This is who we are. This is what we are. And there can be no other competition with that. How we live into this identity as disciples of Jesus Christ is very important. It makes a difference. As Jesus said, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven, whatever you bind will be bound. With this statement, there's a lot of argument, as you can imagine, because it's a confusing statement. And theologians like to write their opinions, and there are a lot of opinions. But the general idea here is that we have the power to preach and to teach, to forgive and to withhold forgiveness, to give grace and withhold it. And as we do that, as we make those decisions, it affects life on earth and it affects heaven. What we do, how we live, how we carry out our tasks as followers of Jesus Christ here on earth affects the world. It affects others because we have the power to proclaim who and what Jesus is. And if we choose not to disclose God's grace, it is bound. That message is bound, and the world may not know it. So we have to understand who we are in relationship to Jesus Christ and what our job is. And while we enjoy very much the fruits of Jesus' labor, we must live into our identity as Christians. Now, it's very easy for us whenever sometimes it is. If someone comes and says, to First Presbyterian Church in Rolla, who are you? It's often much easier for us to identify who we are not. We can start there. That's what the disciples did. When Jesus said, who are the people saying, you know, what are people saying I am? They say, some say John the Baptist, some say the prophet, some say, basically they're saying, this is who you're not, right? You're not Elijah. You're here, he's dead. You know, you're not John the Baptist. We know that, you know, we saw you two together. You're not John the Baptist because you couldn't be together at the same time. Sometimes who we are is defined by who we're not. And as Presbyterians, a lot of people think they can't even spell Presbyterian. They look at it. They don't even know how to say Presbyterian. And so when we identify ourselves, well, what are Presbyterians? Well, we're Christians. We're a church. We're an old church. We're part of the Reformation. We're not. And we start in with that. What are we not? Well, we're not Catholics. We don't, you know, we don't have the saints. We don't have Mary. We don't do the whole communion thing every Sunday. That's not who we are. We're not Lutherans, because once again, high church, communion every Sunday, not Lutherans. And they're German. We're Scottish. We both drink beer, but, you know, we're different. We're different. Then there's, you know, we're not, oh, we could make a whole list, a book, perhaps, on all of the ways we're not Baptist or Assemblies of God or Pentecostals. I mean, that would take all day to walk through the list of why we're not those people. But when it comes down to saying who we are, what is our identity? If we ask people in town, who is First Presbyterian, who are people saying that we are, would we really be afraid of the answer? You know, they'd probably at this point say you're the church with the green roof in the park, with the, you know, with the sign. We've got signs out, you know. But how do they know us? How does the community know us? What's our identity? Who do we think we are? Who do they think we are? One of the things that we must remember is that our identity must be always centered on Jesus Christ. There can be no First Presbyterian Church of Rolla or any church anywhere without Christ at the center. If we don't have Christ at the center, then we're the Lions Club, or we're the Optimist Club. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's not who we're supposed to be. We're to be the Church of Jesus Christ, who is the Son of the Living God. And so what does that look like? That means that we are dynamic, that we move, that we have life, that we do things. Some of the things that we do, all of the things that we do, should be a reflection of who and what Jesus is. So what we should do should be healing and forgiving and offering grace and welcoming strangers and sinners and children. You know, that was a big deal, that Jesus welcomed the children. It was listed in that. Welcomes the sinners and the prostitutes, and, you know, he even welcomes children. Put that in those character cards. That's strange, I know. But you know, he welcomed all of the people who shouldn't be welcoming. So we define by his example that we should be challenging the status quo, and we should be challenging the religious establishment and the way we've always done it. We should be forgiving and feeding people and praying for people, and breaking up arguments amongst ourselves about who's the most important. You know, Jesus had to do that a few times with his disciples. James, John, you're not the most important. Stop fighting. You know, they really wanted to be the number one and number two. And Jesus was like, it's not about that. But we still do it. I'm more important. My group is more important. We get the say. We need to stop doing that, and we need to break up those arguments and live into the peacemaking that was Jesus Christ. Everything that we are as a church must be a reflection of Jesus the Messiah, the Son of the Living God, so that we don't become another civic organization that gathers together and collects our money and tries to do something good from time to time. Everything we do as individuals and as a congregation must be a reflection of who we are as a child, as a disciple of God in Jesus Christ. If we don't, then we become a part of the business of maintaining the status quo. Churches, when we lose our focus as of Jesus Christ, we forget why we exist, our mission and ministry begins to fail. And sooner or later, we become a museum to the past, with all of the relics of who we used to be and what we used to be. We can even become mausoleums with nothing but a bunch of memorial plaques hanging around us to remind us of the past. God is a God of the present. And in that present, we have a job to do. There is a church in Savannah Presbytery that I served for a number of years. In that presbytery, and this little church was in a teeny tiny little rural Georgia town. And a lot of these little towns, you know, much like in Missouri, you know, they used to, you know, it was the county seat, it had the courthouse and everything. And so at a time, it was a bustling little community. But as Atlanta started moving out and small towns started drying up, this little community, which was already small, began to get smaller. And the little Presbyterian church there that was already small, it was built small, began to get smaller. And I mean, by small, I mean their sanctuary was smaller than our chapel. You could fit maybe 50 people in there tightly on an Easter morning. So it was a small church. Whenever I was in Savannah Presbytery, it was that church was teeny tiny. There were maybe 7 or 8 people who would show up on a Sunday morning. And from time to time, because I worked for the presbytery, I would go and fill their pulpit because they didn't have a full-time pastor. And so I would go and preach for them. And for years, their struggle was simply to survive. As individuals out in the community, they were going about their discipleship. They were engaged. They were faithful disciples, but when they would come together to worship, they were saddled with sadness, depression, a sense of hopelessness. There was no joy in coming together because every Sunday they would wonder, am I going to be the only person there? And do I know where all of the light switches are? You know, that sort of a thing where can I turn things off and on if I'm the only person there? Can I unlock the door? Everybody in the church had a key, because someone needed to open the doors if they were the only one there on a Sunday morning. It was a time of sadness and desperation, and this had gone on for years. They had struggled for years with this. 7, 8, 9 people in worship and a sense of sadness and no joy and no hope. Over time, while I was there in that presbytery, I was there for about 11 years in the presbytery, and in about the 9th year that I was there and heard all of this going on up at that little church, a retired pastor came to our presbytery, and he happened to be Mexican. And he had served in the Mexican Presbyterian Church, and then he had come to the United States and did bilingual ministry in the United States, and he had retired to coastal Georgia. Well, in this little community, in our presbytery, there was an enormous Hispanic population of immigrants that had come in. And this little church was right in the center of this little community. So this retired pastor said, well, you know, I'm not really good at retirement. I'd be willing to go start a new church development up there in that little community to see if we could start a Spanish-speaking Presbyterian church. Well, the Swainsboro Church in Swainsboro, Georgia, was like, well, that sounds like a good idea. Let's see how it works. So, long story short, there is now a Spanish-speaking Presbyterian church in this little community. Now, some of the members of that church went to a neighboring town to go to the Anglo-white English-speaking church. Some of the folks stayed in their church. Even though the services were in a language they didn't understand, even though most of the population they couldn't converse well with, but what has happened is over time, they have just become a church community. They have started ministries that engage all elements of their community. They continue to worship together, and it's not that one church gave a building over to another. Nope, they just started welcoming new people and started focusing energy on new people. And all of a sudden, there's a thriving little church that meets the needs of the people in that community that were outside their doors the whole time. They just needed to see them and to recognize how dynamic God truly is. When God says, I am a dynamic God and I will move you and I will move them and you will come together and you will be the church of Jesus Christ. And they recognized, that little church recognized that they needed to be the church of Jesus Christ. Not this family church, but the church of Jesus Christ. Not the church of the Smiths and the Joneses, but the church of Jesus Christ. So, of course, they would open their doors and they would say, come in and thrive and worship and have joy and minister and grow as disciples. This is the God whom we serve. The God who is always moving, out there and in here. And it is our task to claim that as our identity. To understand that God is not finished with us and never will be, that God has a purpose for us and always will have, that God has given us the gifts to be the church of Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. Let us live in to that gift and that identity, to worship with joy and to proclaim the good news with joy that the Messiah has come. And he is here to demonstrate love and forgiveness and grace to the world. And we will show them this great love as if Christ were here doing it himself. Because we know he is in us and through us. Amen.